Time for Manny the Fan. I'm your host, Wim Liu. Joined as always by co-host slash producer slash multiple time author, Alex Wong. Alex, what's going on?
What's up, man? Happy Monday. Anything in the news today?
Well, look, obviously there's a story out there from the Star Bomba size contract negotiations, and I think you can understand the position that we're in. All I really wanted to say on the subject really is that, you know, Masai obviously is the most popular man in the city for how he's built the Raptors into champions and for the quality of character that he has shown as a person and how he sort of represented us around the world. So for me, when thinking about Masai and all things Masai, it's just inspiring to see him climb to the heights where he's at, not only because he's like a self-made man who broke into the industry as an unpaid scout, sleeping on friends' couches across Europe when he first broke into the industry, but also because the reality is that there are certain barriers that people of color face, especially black people face. And we saw an example of that during the NBA championship, during the pinnacle of his career, winning the championship, and the incident of police brutality that affected Masai and robbed him really of fully enjoying that moment. So as just speaking on Masai, like, I'm really happy as a Raptor fan that, you know, he wanted to stay here and that he chose to stay here. Clearly there was tons of interest. We saw what the EPL was interested in. We saw another NBA team offer him a 3% ownership stake, and he chose to stay here because he loves the city and loves his franchise. So, you know.
No, I echo all those words. If anyone wants to offer me a 3% ownership stake too, I just want to stay it on air.
Yeah.
You know?
You'll
hit me up. Yeah, I'd love to be an owner of an EPL team. Maybe not Man U. Heard they struggled this weekend.
Oh.
But we don't need to get to that.
No, we could.
No. Wait till Faisal comes in on Thursday. Listen, we're going to get
United would have lost again by then.
Listen, no, that was well said. We're going to get to the topic that people are really here for, and that is, why is Zvi Mihailuk struggling so much in the regular season?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. What's going on, though? Because, okay, let's talk a little bit. So since we last talked, the Raptors beat the Celtics.
Yes.
A thorough beatdown, by the way.
Very.
And then lost the other night on Saturday at home to the Dallas Mavericks. And this is the one thing I wanted to talk to you about, is the depth of the Raptors. Mm-hmm. So this was something we were talking about coming into the season. Deep team, you know, going to have a really good second unit. Maybe the bench mob thing is coming back. Zvi has struggled, shooting 33% from three, generally struggling. Kem was a minus 14 against Dallas. And, you know, Luka Doncic was just looking at him like food. Goran Dragic, who you referred to on the Raptors Reaction podcast as a potential double agent, looks awfully old and is definitely not running the second unit so far, as we hoped. And Chris Boucher, 2 for 15 from 3 on the season, 0 for 5 in 8 minutes against Dallas.
Well, he's already taken 15 threes. It's been 3 games.
Yeah, and he got called out by Nick after the game against Dallas because reporters asked whether Chris Boucher was still very much an up-and-down player, and he said there isn't a lot of up right now, which, let's start there, okay?
I love how blunt Nick is.
Let's start there. Nick Nurse flat-out benched Boucher in the second half against Dallas, and you said this was not without cause.
It's not. So first off, he only played 8 minutes in that game. In a game where the Raptors were in foul trouble, so they needed more front court help. In a game where Kem Birch was getting burned in the pick and roll, I guess, you know, potentially that's another guy who you could play Chris over. And in a game where they were struggling for offense, and clearly Chris is a guy who gives you offense, especially off the bench typically, and the Raptors bench at the end of the night I thought was just terrible. But having said all that, I love when Nick keeps it real, because this is not the first time he's called out a player. It's not the last time. And when you go back and watch the shot attempts that Chris took, you understand exactly what Nick was talking about. And I think Nick is probably also upset about some things defensively, but just strictly speaking offensively. So Chris takes 5 shots in 8 minutes, okay? One of those shots was a full court heave. So I don't even count that. So that's 4 shots, okay? But among the 4 shots, his first shot of the game, he drives straight into the paint off a closeout, attacks the closeout, which is good. But then Kristaps Porzingis is right there, and Kristaps is 7'3". Long arms, standing perfectly in position. If you're Chris Boucher, you don't just run into him and try to score over him, especially since Scotty Barnes was right there waiting for the dump-off pass for the dunk, okay? Instead, he gets blocked heavily by Porzingis. Mavs go the other way in transition. Terrible shot, all right? His other shot of the game, this next one, outside the full court heave, was an air ball 3 falling out of bounds. Now, the shot itself was okay, but he airballed the 3. It was open. And then he fell over. And then he was sort of slow to get up as the Mavericks got the rebound and went out in transition. I think one Reddit user actually enhanced the video and saw that Nick physically pushed him, like, because he fell right in front of Nick, in front of the bench, Raptors bench. He literally, like, shoveled him, like, hey, you know, get back on D. Now, granted, in Chris's case, in his defense, he goes back and he blocks the three. Great play. Honestly, he blocked it so hard, he blocked it with his elbow, right? That's the kind of potential you see from Chris. But still, not a good offensive decision. The next shot down, he runs a pick and roll with Precious Achiuwa, which I don't think that is number one in the Raptors playlist. I don't think that's number two in the Raptors playlist. Like, if you're thinking about, like, the Raptors playbook, like the Mandarin Buffet, like, this is probably, like, what is this, man? Like, watermelon slices?
Yeah, the sushi.
Yeah, this is the sushi in the Mandarin Buffet.
So we're all sitting there waiting. So waiting for Pascal to come back is just, we're waiting for the crab legs to come out.
Yeah.
The Raptors fan base is just waiting for them to bring out the crab legs, is what you're saying.
Right. But under no circumstances are you going to Mandarin and filling up on the sushi in your first plate.
You don't speak for me.
Okay. I hope I do, because that's shameful on multiple levels. But yeah, a pull up mid range jumper, 22 feet off a pick and roll, 9 seconds left in the shot clock, contested as well. That's a terrible shot, period. Almost for anybody, but especially in this case. And then the last shot of the game, he catches the ball off an inbound. Okay, so the Mavs defended the first place reasonably well, but he catches the ball off the inbound. There's still 10, 11 seconds left on the clock. Chris decides, oh, I'm just going to step back from here and hoist another three. And, you know, it's another one that doesn't come close to going in. And at that point, Nick is like, I've seen enough. And so I think it's early enough in the season where Nick has to sort of establish a couple of standards, establish a couple of boundaries. It's not saying that Chris is not going to play the rest of the year. That's ridiculous. We know Chris is an important player. We know he's a productive player. We saw it last season. He was the Raptors' best player off the bench. Arguably the Raptors' only good player off the bench, but still genuinely a very productive player. He has a role to play on this team. Nick understands that, and I think he just wants to see that type of responsibility and that type of play out of Chris. So I think, especially if Nick has already told him about it in the first place, coming out to the media and saying that, especially when he's asked outright, is something that I think it's fair, and it's in keeping with the way that Nick has treated pretty much everybody on the team. And it's not like, hey, he's just like trying to embarrass people. He's not. What he's trying to say is, I have very, very clear expectations of what everyone's supposed to do, and when you don't meet those, A, you don't play, and B, you know, it becomes a topic. And then everyone just has to sort of get on the same page and play well. But, yeah, I was disappointed with Chris in the three games here so far. Although I thought defensively he was pretty decent in the Celtics game. But offensively, I think that's what the Raptors need. Because if you look at the scoring off the bench, it's dire.
We're here again. It's so dire already.
Yep.
What's going on? No, we need Chris Boucher to step up. Are you okay in general with the way Nick approaches this? Because like you mentioned, this has been a consistent pattern of him calling out his players, whether they are role players or star players. He hasn't been afraid to use the media and use his platform to call out his players that way.
Yeah, I think so long as he does it with every single player on the team, and he's a straight shooter, then I'm cool with that. Yeah, yeah.
I'm with you. I think it's a little bit, I wouldn't say jarring, but I think it's just strange to me because I feel like a lot of coaches in the league don't have that kind of pull in terms of being able to do this without pushback from players.
If you're a coach in this league and you don't have the pull,
but a lot of coaches don't,
to tell your bench player, to tell your bench forward, a rotational bench forward, I'm not trying to put down Chris at all, but if you don't have the pull in this league to tell Chris Boucher to take better shots, you probably shouldn't be a coach.
No, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
No, so. And Nick has the championship ring, and I think that speaks volumes too.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has just like the support of the organization. And again, it's not to embarrass a guy. It's really just you need to do it better because the four shots, he took five shots. One of them was a full court heave. The other four shots I described to you in detail, I'll watch back in film. I'm like, none of these should be shots, period. So if your role is to come into the game and be a bench scorer and these are the shots that you're taking, that's not it for me. And I think for Nick, he knows how important it is to have the second unit to be productive for him. Because I think in the Mavericks game, for example, like, okay, there were foul trouble, guys got tired, you know, OG was hot in the first half, cold in the second half, whatever, man. But ultimately speaking, the starters played pretty well. All the starters guarded well. You know, the starting groups I thought were pretty positive in terms of plus minus, and everybody scored in double digits. That's a pretty good game, except for the fact that the Raptors got almost nothing off the bench. And I think if Goran's not giving you that, if Chris is not giving you that, then the Raptors bench is going to really struggle. So they need Chris, and I think that's what he wants. He wants Chris to respond to that and to come into the game tonight and going forward with a better effort. And must I remind you, I mean, Chris has tremendous upside because what we saw the last time Chris played Chicago, do you remember this game? 38 and 19. Now, the Raptors lost. It's fine. Whatever. Raptors in Tampa last year, you know, whatever. But 38 and 19 is 38 and 19. So I'm not saying I don't think Nick expects to see 38 and 19, but I think that I want to see a better effort from Chris. That's all.
No, I think that's completely fair. We need to.
He's never coming on the station. They're never coming on the show, unfortunately. But it is what it is.
Was he gonna before this segment?
Yeah, fair enough.
No, but I think you broke down OG's shots from the home opener last week.
Yeah,
and you had this great breakdown just now of Chris Boucher's shots. We need to make this a sponsored segment. I think Ciroc Vodka, maybe Ciroc Vodka wants to do, you know, shots by Will Liu. Alizé is more my generation. So we'll
it would be great
out.
If we still have Sorry, Alizé man. Johnson, I guess.
The whole time you were breaking down Chris Boucher, that's all was in my mind. I didn't even hear what you said, but it hurt. It sounded like the shots were really bad. So I'm with you there. Now, the reason why the Raptors needed the second unit to step up on Saturday was because Scottie Barnes and OG Anunoby and Fred VanVleet were all in foul trouble for most of the game. So Scottie had an incredible Friday night performance in Boston, 25 points, 13 rebounds. Looked like I was watching Wilt Chamberlain in HD for a second there.
Yeah. You must remember him from his rookie season.
Once again, I wasn't born during Prohibition. All right. Yeah. I just don't drink voluntarily. So against the Mavericks on Saturday, you made a note that you want him to be, and I think Nick said this too, because you and Nick just think alike.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because on Friday, you know, we spent the whole show saying Gary's got to start because you're the only person in Toronto who said that.
Yep.
And Nick Nurse just said, all right, you know, I'm going to listen to the Raptors show with Will Liu and do what he says.
Yep.
But you and Nick both said after the game, like, Scottie needs to just be more aggressive and more assertive. This is what you want to see from him, right?
Yeah. And I don't think this is even a critique at all. I think this is like in a different case to what Nick was saying with Chris. I think this is a case where he's actively encouraging. He's saying you're doing great. Do more. Do even more. Because first off, I think even though it's the fourth overall pick, what Scottie Barnes did in his first week as a pro exceeded everyone's expectations. He averaged 18 and 10 on 52% shooting for a guy who, according to the draft experts, according to me, who plagiarized the draft experts, said it was a, you know, limited scorer. And 18 and 10 speaks for itself. I mean, that is amazing. Of course, I don't know if he'll keep it up all season, but what we've seen so far is that, you know, it's not like he's having 18 and 10 because he's hitting six threes a night. He's not doing that. He's just playing within the flow and he's doing really well. And I think what Nick wants to do is like, look, especially with Pascal out right now, you be, you know, one of the focal points of the offense. I know that's really early for him in his career. I know that's probably beyond what people expected of him at this moment. But based on what he's done so far, it's been pretty nice. And I think in some cases, I think Scottie has already done that. If you look at his, in terms of field goal attempts, he's third on the team right now. Of course, he's also played a lot of minutes, so that makes sense. His usage rate is at 22%, which is about average for a starter, maybe a slightly above average, but it could be higher. It could be even higher. I think most all-stars, if you look at their usage, minimum 25%, to the point where some people are like 35%. I'm sure if you look at Luka's usage rate in the other game, based on how many times he had the ball up the floor, was like 80%. So, you know, 22%, that means one in five possessions is being decided by Scottie. I think he could be even more, especially since the fact that with OG struggling a little bit to create his own shot, with Fred doing the most that he can, you kind of want Scottie to do some of that stuff. And I was watching the film of what he's done so far. It's really impressive. One thing I really like with Scottie is, so he has that mid-range jumper that he goes to, right? And we saw that against Boston. He hit three of those. In the Dallas game, he didn't hit any of those mid-range jumpers. But what he did instead was, okay, I don't even need that to score. Because what I'll just do, I'll just drive into you. And I like his patience on his drives. If you watch him drive, guys would mostly play him to drive. So they'll try to cut him off. That's what Luka tried to do to him. And Luka is a really big guy. I mean, Luka's at least 240. Like, that guy is huge, especially seeing him in person. Maxi Kleber is another guy who's really, really built, especially as a sort of a wing defender, but also mostly like a power forward. Those guys both played Scotty to drive. But what Scotty did was, okay, you want to play me to drive? That's fine. I'll take that space, and then I'll be the first to put my shoulder into your chest. Instead of you bumping me first and stopping my momentum, he was taking his momentum, putting it on his defender, and getting to a spot. And then when he ends up raising up and shooting, he's steady with that shot, and he gets to a spot, and he goes up straight up. That's something where I've even noticed with Pascal, where he'll get to his spot, but because he's not as strong as Scotty is right now, he'll spin away from the contact, or he'll launch at a different angle or whatever, right, just to sort of compensate, you know, get the shot off. Scotty's strong enough where he can go into his move and then stop when he gets to a specific spot and rise straight up. That's going to improve your finishing so much because you're shooting on balance. You're shooting within the rhythm of your move. And, we've seen him sort of score in that sort of mid-range to almost that in the paint area. And I think that that's something that he can do more of, it because a lot of his offense right now is coming within the flow of the team, and that's great. And a lot of it's in transition and things like that. But there has already been more self-creation from Scotty than what I anticipated from him. I mean, this is without the three-point shot being a real thing for him. But the fact that he can hit these mid-rangers, the fact that he can get himself to the rim, is a very impressive trait. And I don't think so far teams have double-teamed him just yet. But the more he does it, the more teams will then put extra attention on him. And then that's actually going to activate the best part of his game right now, which is his passing. And so far, actually, he's only averaging 1.7 assists. I think that's 5 assists in three games so far. I think the more that he attacks, the more it's going to open up his passing as well, and that's going to get better shots for everyone else. If you look at the guys in the starting five right now, who can impact the rim the most, I think it's Scotty Barnes.
He's in the gifted child program right now. Already.
Absolutely. And this is what happens when you put your kid in gifted. They get so much homework. All the other kids are gifted as well. Then you feel pressure and you feel insecure, and then later on in life you have a socially awkward child who does sports radio.
Wow. Was that your personal story?
No.
You want to tell that acupuncture story you told me in confidence on Friday?
Another time.
Not right now? Okay, maybe on Friday. Back to the game. So OG Anunoby struggled the first two games, 3 for 17 and 4 for 18 against Washington and Boston, mm-hmm. came out on Saturday against Dallas and looked like the number one option that everybody had been expecting, at least to start the game. So what were the encouraging signs about OG, and what were things you think he can still improve on?
So I think, first off, the start of the game was absolutely perfect, as you mentioned. The Raptors won the first quarter 25-18. It was a case of OG dominating the floor on both ends. Defensively, we know what he can do, but, he blocked Chris Asperzingas on a jumper. Again, the guy's 7'3". Like, it's not easy to just block him on a jumper.
I've also never seen someone waste the idea of being 7'3". He doesn't deserve to be 7'3".
You didn't see the original Chris Asperzingas? The guy who we took number one overall in Toronto? No, I'm kidding. Chris Asperzingas is at least better than Barnani. He plays defense at the rim, at least.
But fine. Impressive.
Yeah, he picked off Luka as well. And he just made the right reads within the flow of the offense in terms of, okay, Luka is trying to cut me off at the three-point line here. I'm going to attack him the other way, spin, keep him on my hip, and then drive all the way to the rim. If there's no help at the rim, I'm going to go in and dunk it. That was his first shot. Another play where he's sort of cutting along the baseline. He's open for a brief second. Great pass inside. High-low feed. He finishes the layup. Within the flow of the offense, the ball swings to him. He's open for three. Hit the three. Next time down, Porzingis tries to close out on him. He takes a step inside the arc, and he takes a mid-range jumper. That's all within the flow of the offense. It was great. His first quarter was amazing. His second quarter was also quite good, even though he got into foul trouble. That limited his time. Like, he didn't finish the first half. Which you normally would, especially at the end of the second quarter, you usually have your starters on, but he was in foul trouble, so he couldn't do that. We saw our man Isak Bonga make his Raptors debut. That was interesting to see. And then, though, I think the thing that is tricky is in the second half, clearly Jason Kidd and the Mavericks coaching staff made it a point to discuss, hey, what didn't work in the first half, what did work? They made a better concerted effort of limiting OG and taking away any opportunities from him within the flow of the offense, right? And what I mean by that is he didn't take his first shot in the third quarter until 6 minutes in. If you're the number one option, to go 6 minutes with the starting unit without taking a shot is not an indictment, because it would be different if he was involved and they were doubling him and then he was kicking it out and that was generating offense. the Raptors were struggling on offense, and he didn't take a shot in the first 6 minutes of the third quarter. And the first shot he took was a contested pull-up three out of rhythm, and he missed it. And then in the fourth quarter, he took really only one shot with 5 minutes and 34 seconds left, and then no other shots except for in the last minute where he took two threes. That's why he started the game with 20 points in the first half and finished the game with 23, is that teams adjust to him. And that's one of the things that's also really difficult to become the number one guy, is that, like, you have to know when to sort of put your stamp on the game, when to take over a little bit. I mean, this is an extreme example, but you look at Luka Doncic, for example. Starting the game, they were kind of playing sort of team offense, let's run the sets, whatever. Raps are destroying them. Then Luka, the second quarter, is like, you know what? I'm just going to run every single play from now until the end of the game. And what happened is that he picked the Raptors apart and the Raptors lost. And obviously, no one has expectations for OG to do what Luka does. That's outrageous. Completely different players. But it's sort of that same sense of like, hey, this is what the game is shifting here. They're trying to deny me. I can't just play within the flow of the offense anymore. I need to be the offense, at least for one or two possessions. And to be honest, I feel for OG, because when he has chosen to be the offense so far this year, results have been awkward. Results have been limited. And to be honest, he's not only gotten blocked, or he's ended up off balance and falling over and stuff like that, but it's impacted the team negatively in terms of, like, he's out of position now defensively going the other way in transition. So I feel for him, but at the same time, that is the burden of being the number one guy, is to do all that stuff. So for me, I would have liked to see OG call his own number just a little bit more. And I think this is something where his teammates can help with too, right? Like Fred, hey, let's clear it once out of the floor. OG's got that mismatch right there against Tim Hardaway Jr. or whatever. Set him on the block, give him the ball, see what he can do. Nick Nurse coming out of a timeout being like, hey, haven't had OG a shot in a while. That's not acceptable. He's our guy. Let's set up this play for OG. Maybe it doesn't have to be on the block. Maybe it's sort of a catch and shoot situation, but just drop a play. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's a work in progress for everybody. Again, we have to really acknowledge the fact that he is in a new role. He's inexperienced. And so these are the things that happen. But I'm very encouraged at least to see what happened in the first half. That was kind of like the old OG. If you play within the flow of the offense, if he's able to contribute on defense, he's a sensational player.
Yeah, and this is going to be the running theme for the Raptors this season, I think. When we're looking at game to game, there's just going to be a balance between winning games and the players developing within the games, right? So you look at someone like Scottie, but also, like you said, OG getting adjusted to the number one role. In terms of getting to a win total, I think that's really the crux of it. Are they able to find those development curves and win games at the same time? Mm-hmm. And we've seen a little bit the first week. I was thinking, I think the Raptors are going to be the only team in the league to average under 100 points on like both ends, like scoring and allowing. I think they're there right now. Actually, yes, they are. 97.7 points per game and 94.7 points opposing teams are so scoring.
You're saying bet the under. Bet the under on all Raptors games.
Bet the under. Take your mortgage. Take whatever savings you have.
Don't take your mortgage. Anytime
new Sportsnet betting program, betting advice from me, the expert.
Damn.
Who once went to a casino and missed Mother's Day. Have I discussed this on here? I feel like I've referenced like that way too much.
I've already heard the story in real life on another program.
I only
have
four stories. Hey, I got one more story before we go to break.
Okay.
So my dad watches basketball.
Okay.
Not as closely as us, right? Yeah. Who does? Who watches as closely as you? I'm going to excuse myself from this narrative. So he's got a hot take. He hit me with a hot take last night.
Uh-huh.
He says if the Raptors don't make the playoffs, he doesn't even know what Nick Nurse's name is, but he says if the Raptors don't make the playoffs, the coach is getting fired. So that's a Mr. Wong hot take of the week.
I want to build that into like an actual segment.
Sponsored by Ciroc Vodka. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were like, anyway.
Sam Wu Barbecue.
I would love a sponsorship from Sam Wu Barbecue. Please, we've already mentioned you three times on the show already. I've already called myself Sam Wu. Anyway. That's not going to happen. Nick's going to be here a very long time. But I would be disappointed at least, because I think if Nick coaches his team up to capability, they can be in the playoffs. There is no issue.
I want Nick here long term. I'm the number one Nick Nurse fan club member.
Absolutely.
But I just, let's just
and
collect.
You still haven't gotten your hat yet, so.
I know, Nick. Yo, hit me up for the address, man. I'll drop it on air. No, but we're going to collect my dad's hot takes over the year.
That's the honest truth.
Shouts to our producer, Derek, man. Keeping us on our toes on Monday. All right. This is going off the rails a little bit. Let's gather ourselves and take a 5-minute break, Will.
That's right.
Janky defense.
And when we come back, we'll preview tonight's matchup against the Bulls. talk about a topic that just won't go away, the story of how DeMar DeRozan was wronged by the Toronto Raptors. I'm your host, Wim Liu. You've been listening to The Raptors Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Raptors Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Wayne Liu, joined by producer, co-host Alex Wong. Alex, in a New York Times interview with Jonathan Abrams, fantastic writer, by the way, that was published last week, Kyle Lowry talked about a couple of things. What did he talk about?
Talked about his decision to sign with Miami. Kyle said, quote, "We all were mutually agreed that it was time. It's hard to put it into words. It was just time. For me, I knew with Miami it was the right situation, right timing, right place, right people, right everything." So that was his first quote. I found it'd be hilarious if he said that to Masai at the trade deadline last year. Hey, it's time. And Masai said, actually,
it's not.
Just go golfing for three more months. You're good. And then you can cross over to Miami. Second thing he said that I wanted to talk about as a larger conversation about DeMar DeRozan, since DeMar and the Bulls are in town tonight. Kyle talked about collaborating with the Raptors last season on deciding his future. He said, quote, "Sometimes franchises have to do what's best for them. But I was in a position where I had say, and I had a little bit, I wouldn't say power, but I had a little bit of, listen, it's not going to be a good look if we don't collaborate on this together. We all agreed that to be on the same page was the best thing to do, and that was that. With DeMar not having the autonomy of having a decision, I think it was just such a different circumstance. It prepared them to not do that with me." So, let's play this clip. DeMar DeRozan did an interview recently for Bleacher Report with Golden State Warriors forward Draymond Green, explaining how the DeMar Kawhi trade went down in the summer of 2018. So let's listen to this clip.
"And I read before that, right before that or something, you met with Masai, or you talked with Masai, and he told you you weren't traded. How long between y'all conversation and you getting traded?"
Two days. It was 2 days. I went to Vegas. We all met. We had a dinner, you know, have a sit down and have a conversation about, like, all right, we about to do this thing. We about to give it one more shot, blah, blah, blah. And 2 days later, you get a call. That was the that hurt. Like, tell me beforehand, like, look, it's a possibility. We think about doing this. Cool. You know what I mean?
"And your call come from who?"
Masai.
"He tell you you traded?"
Yeah, he calls me. So, one, I'm in the movie theaters. To this day, I do not watch this movie, right?
What's the movie?
Equalizer 2. My phone keep ringing. It's Masai. So I'm like, what the f-? So he texts me and said, "Debo, give me a call when you get a chance." So I'm like, all right, cool. So as soon as I send the text back, I get on the gram. Like, all right, I don't see nothing on the gram. I'm on Twitter. I'm Googling. I'm like, all right, I don't see, like, you know, it's just in my mind. So I leave the movie theater. I get in the car, call him back. He didn't answer. I'm like, all right, probably ain't nothing. He called me back. And he just, you know, asked, how was the movie? Like, some casual. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm like, movie was cool, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, what's up? She was like, we just traded you to San Antonio. I just want to let you know it's going to come out in the morning. And I was like, literally, bro, I touched the driver. I said, stop the car. I got out the car and just walked down the street, hung up the phone, sat outside, a Jack in the Box or a Del Taco for like 2 hours. Swear to God. Swear to God. I called two people. I called Cal. He was shocked about it. He didn't know. Then I called Rudy and told him, like, yo, I just got traded. He said, to where? I said, San Antonio. He started laughing, right? I'm like, hung up the phone. Like, you want to laugh? Well, but you know what I mean? But it was one of the toughest times ever, because I didn't really have, like, no guidance with the, you know what I mean? Like, nobody helped me. Like, and I wasn't going to talk to nobody about it. You know what I mean? I just wanted to take it all in and figure it out as it went. You know what I mean? But it was tough. It was tough.
So two questions I wanted to ask you, and probably more coming out of it. First question, should DeMar be upset at how Masai handled the trade?
I mean, you can't control how you feel. You can only control how you react to things, right? I think just generally in life, I think he absolutely has every reason to be upset. Like, I think that they talked, reports are, I mean, and this, again, it's the only thing I really think with me, I'm just like, yo, this is 3 years ago, and this has been rehashed every single time, every 2 months, basically, it comes up.
I love it, man. It's great to fill
a
segment.
It just happens all the time.
DeMar, please talk about it again.
This is not new. I'm sure he will, okay? It's something that's going to come up repeatedly. And I think, you know, everything has been resolved. Whatever, it's history. But, I mean, it's an important and an interesting piece of history. You can't control you being upset, but you can control how you react to it. And I think that for DeMar, his gripe and the reason he was upset at the time was, A, because he got traded. That's just, you know, not a pleasant thing. But, B, that apparently Masai had talked to him, you know, a week before, and they were like, in Vegas or whatever, and they're just like, hey, is everything good? And he's like, nah, it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, he referenced it in this Draymond interview, right?
Yeah.
They had talked about just a few days about, hey, let's try this, give this another shot, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, on Masai's side, I'm not sure you're going to tell any of your players, even DeMar, that you're in these talks. Because you don't want to jeopardize it, because this wasn't just any other trade.
Well, you saw how upset he was about it in the first place, right? So if you did tell him about it and that jeopardizes the trade, let's say the leak comes out, maybe, you know, some other team is in on it and they...
Yeah, I'm sure Danny Ainge was at the 1 foot line of trading for Kawhi Leonard, as reported by Danny Ainge.
Yeah, fair enough. But, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, like, I think from Masai's perspective, he wanted to keep that trade because he knew how monumental of a move that would have been. And clearly, if you look at the history of what happened with that trade, it's one of the greatest trades in NBA history, like bar none. So I think from his perspective, he was looking out for the team in the sense that if anything came in to jeopardize that trade, if anything came in to jeopardize the championship, we would not forgive Masai about that. We wouldn't. So that's, but I mean, I understand DeMar being upset, of course.
I totally understand DeMar being upset. And for me, I agree with you. It's just one of those things where whether he was at the movies, whether, you know, he was hanging out with family, or whether he was at Summer League, there wasn't going to be a good, appropriate time to receive this news.
Mm.
Wherever he was, this news was going to come down hard. So that context of it, while I get DeMar being upset, I feel like there was just going to be no other way around it. He made a commitment to the city. The team made a commitment to him. But I think that leads to the second part, is that I think we don't talk enough about when there is this outrage or anger at how the Raptors organization handled this, is the performances in the playoffs.
Yeah.
This was, for context, this was coming right after Dwayne Casey was fired, after the number one seed Raptors lost in the second round. They were swept by the Cleveland Cavaliers. And this was DeMar benched at the end of game three, that people remember as the LeBron James game-winning shot game. And in game four, he was ejected early in a blowout loss because he committed a flagrant two foul and a fast break on Jordan Clarkson. So I think that context is important too, because I think this conversation and a lot of these conversations is always two things, the basketball conversation and then the personal conversation, right?
Yeah, yeah.
From a basketball standpoint, have you been more excited than hearing that the Raptors had acquired Kawhi Leonard?
No.
And didn't give up OG Anunoby or Pascal Siakam?
I think you know this exactly. But so I happened to be camping that weekend because I figured, you know, free agency is done.
Yeah,
right?
You're an outdoorsman. You're an outdoorsman.
Apparently I'm an outdoorsman. I woke up that morning. I checked my phone. I got like 20 texts and like a whole bunch of messages. Oh my God, Kawhi. It's like 7 a.m. in the morning. I literally immediately hopped into the rental car and recorded a 30-minute reaction podcast on my phone. That's how excited I was about that. And then I think I walked you and the rest of the Pound the Rock crew through the technicals of how to do that at work. And I had to drive around Algonquin to make sure I got service to send you some of these files and stuff like that. Anyway, that's not that important. Yes, I was very excited about it as a basketball perspective. I think the basketball here, there was almost nothing that was done wrong here. And I think that for players, it's very difficult for them to separate the two because they're literally the basketball player and that they're affected by both things. I think for me, what I don't expect to hear this, but it would at least make me feel a little better, is when people acknowledge their place in some of these things, right? Because it's not like Masai wanted to do this. I think we would, you know, as great as Kawhi was, I would have preferred to win the championship with DeMar instead of Kawhi, just all things being equal, because I love DeMar. He was such a big part of this franchise. The way that we feel happy about Kyle winning the championship, I wish we were able to share that feeling with DeMar himself. But I think there's also a very real conversation to be had about the fact that it wasn't just that you brought Kawhi and what he did into the championship team, but that you took DeMar off that team, because there were real limitations with what he did that hurt them not only in the Cavs series. I understand that they only got bounced by the Cavs outside of getting bounced by the more experienced the Nets team, and then getting swept by the Wizards. By the way, those things happen too. But whatever, early, that's fine, right? They struggled in other series as well, and there were real tangible things that I thought that having DeMar as a number one guy limited the team in the sense that he didn't play defense, right? In the last series against the Cavs, 77% shooting from three from J.R. Smith. 77. That's a B+. From J.R. Smith. Okay? And then it's also the way he played offense, because there was no spacing that he provided at all. Refused to develop the three-point shot. In fact, he even outright said multiple times, I'm just not going to shoot the three. And you know what? I get that. He was very effective doing other things. But I think in the playoff setting, that limited the Raptors. So if you're Masai, what do you want him to do? You tried it. It's not like you didn't give this group time. Most groups don't get 5, 6, 7 years.
Masai gave them more time than I think other general managers would have. Yes. I think another general manager would have fired the coach and changed the roster after they were swept by the Wizards.
Yes. And instead, he kept the coach. He kept the star players. And the thing is here, he re-signed the star players. Let's not forget what we do this thing for. We do this thing for money, okay? Everything else is important as well, but very important is the money. That helps you take care of your family. That puts you up for generational wealth. Were any of them underpaid? When it came time to it, did people get paid for what they did? And they did. And when DeMar got traded to San Antonio, first off, it wasn't like he got traded to some garbage organization. It's San Antonio, for God's sakes, okay? And the second of all, did he get paid? Yes, he still got paid. So, of course, it burns. And I have no, obviously, I'm not even going to sit here and be cruel about this. It would burn me too. Of course, it would burn me too. But it would burn me from a place of pride, not from a place of understanding. Because I think if you go through with this, if you sit with it, if you see the championship happen, the takeaway is, for me personally, I'll be like, you know what? Everyone made their move, and that's what it was. And I think DeMar himself has actually moved on from it as well. I think him and Masai have talked it out. I think Masai detailed this interaction where DeMar came back to Toronto and Masai was in the locker room, and DeMar kind of came up and gave him a big hug. And I think for Masai, he had felt so personally guilty about it because he's such a good, kind-hearted human being. He said, by the way, this is the worst part of the business, is doing this to people, right? So it's not like he's even shying away from this. He's publicly apologized for this, I would say, at least a dozen times.
No, for sure. And I don't think Masai needs to apologize. And I think it's really good for you to give the context that Masai and DeMar have reconciled in a way. I think there's probably a longer conversation to be had down the line. But again, you know, I don't think this, you know, DeMar interview that he did with Draymond, I just think anytime DeMar sits down for a longer length interview, this is going to come up because this is such a huge part of his career.
And it's his story to tell.
It is his story to tell. And I'm totally with you. I think as long as we're able to look at it both from a basketball and personal perspective, I think we can get aligned on that. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to the press conference because Masai was in Africa. He was doing Giants of Africa stuff at the time.
Yeah, he was
right?
in, I think, Kenya.
Yeah, he was
with Barack Obama opening a new court.
Yeah, which is just wild too as part of the story.
Yeah.
But he came back to Toronto and the first press conference that he did, I remember.
Oh, he was sweating.
So many of these, and I'm not trying to throw like local reporters under the bus. I think from the outside, if you're not covering basketball and if you're a local media coming there, this was the go-to narrative. How could you trade DeMar DeRozan, the face of the franchise, the guy who committed here? And Masai had to basically, like you said, apologize for making a trade that vaulted this Raptors team that looked like they had hit a ceiling into legitimate championship contention. Mm-hmm. Like you said, now, would we sit here and say this if the Raptors lost in the second round with Kawhi? Actually, I think yes, because Masai wasn't taking stuff away from where this team was headed in terms of building.
Yeah,
like I think even like as cruel, if you want to be so cruel from a basketball standpoint, this was as much a trade to get off DeMar's contract as much as it was to getting Kawhi. Now, obviously, I know getting Kawhi was the main thing.
Yeah, that's, you know.
It's debatable.
Yeah.
I get it. But I just think if fans are upset at how this was handled and they're upset at how DeMar's exit was, listen, Will and I aren't going to tell you how to feel. Like this is just all our own opinions. But I just think if you're asking for the team to build a championship contender, and if you're evaluating players even as you are now, looking at a Gary Trent Jr. and looking at all these players on the team, can they help us get to a championship? Then you shouldn't push back at the front office when they do actually step out and make a move that actually did vault them into the championship.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And again, this is not about disrespecting somebody. It's not about backstabbing somebody. This is the business, and this is exactly what people are here to do. They're here to watch wins. You cannot tell me as a Raptor fan you did not feel the best you've ever felt as a fan watching that playoff run, watching that championship run. The one thing that when you're talking about this, and going back to the press conference where Masai was getting grilled about the trade and he was sweating like crazy and everything like that, the undertone of all those messages was like, how dare you, as Toronto of all places, this little place just up in the north, you know, the only franchise, not in the States, players want to leave. Oh, they write kilometers instead of miles, whatever. Okay. How dare Toronto of all places to do this to DeMar? You know, who are you to do that? And I'm sorry, Masai has felt this way about this team forever. He's always carried himself with a championship swagger. And that's what he was doing, winning the championship with that trade. You don't tell any other franchise in the NBA, how dare you do this? How dare you go make a move for the championship? And I hated that undertone, as if the Raptors should just be happy. Should be, you know, just be happy. Oh, you know what? It's cute that you won all these games. It's cute that you got second team, you know, all NBA players. It's cute that you got guys in the All-Star game year after year. It's cute that you got the All-Star game, but you should be happy with that. And the one guy who said he wasn't was Masai. And that's why we love that man. Because when it comes down to it, however much you pay him or whatever, he deserves it. Because he will make the tough moves, but he will get the team to win. And I hated that sentiment, that undertone, because that's how it was always phrased. Oh, you know, this whole franchise didn't exist before DeMar was here. You know, he came down from heaven and you know, with the building blocks and put this little team together, and everything was raised by him. Like, of course DeMar had a huge part to play in this, right? He's the franchise leader in scoring. He's made the All-Star team so many times. He represented the city tremendously. He's a tremendous human being.
And all of that stuff will never be taken away. He is forever part of this Raptors history.
Exactly. Exactly. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that the Raptors can never aspire to being more than DeMar. No offense. There's nothing against him. It's just that's what they did.
This is what Masai means when he did the press conference and said, believe in yourself, believe in the city, yeah. Think bigger. Yeah. And Masai is always thinking bigger.
And that's why I want in charge. That's why I want in charge. Because I don't think for a second, when I look at a man like Masai Ujiri, that is not a man who is going to be true and honest to certain principles. He seems like an extremely principled man. He seems extremely charitable. He's a leader. He's admired the world over, right? Not just Toronto, the world. I know who he is as a person. This is his job. This is the job that we all do. So.
No, I think that's really well said. Any other nice things you want to say about Masai? I think this will help get him on our show.
Masai, come on the program.
Yeah, come on the program. Let's talk about DeMar.
Let's break down the
minute by minute of the trade.
I know what he's going to say. He's like, look, I'm sorry. I you know, like, I need to be fired for this because I won the championship.
Can you imagine how much better we'd be if Masai gave us like a speech every day? Like just told us to, you know, get ourselves together.
Yeah. Well, did you see the Open Gym episode? Because they recently released one that was fantastic of the draft and sort of like everything that surrounded it. And the first time Masai met up with Scotty after the draft, after taking him fourth, and he's like, hey, remember what we talked about? Winning. And he just said it to him like, like, he's like, I don't care about anything else. I just want to win. You understand? That's what I want from an immigrant dad.
No, we need to get him. I need to ask him, like, just the sequence of things he asked for from the Spurs and the things he didn't give the Spurs.
Yeah.
Like, I'm guessing the Spurs must have asked for Pascal and OG at some point in the negotiation. Shouts to Jakob Poeltl, but damn, that's a good trade. And I want to know, at what point, like, did you just text him on your BBM? Were you like, hey, by the way, can you toss in $5 million? And then also don't, you know, address it to the Giants of Africa Foundation. I hope that's what happened.
I hope that money went straight to the foundation because the foundation deserves it.
Yeah.
But also, that is the most underrated part about this. And you pointed this out as well. You didn't give up Pascal or OG. Like, so out of the young guys the Raptors had on that team, right? Because out of 2018, the Raptors had a couple of young guys. I would say in terms of OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, Norman Powell, Jakob Poeltl, DeLon Wright, those are the six young players they had on that team that teams would have wanted to trade for. They gave up the fifth best player in that group.
Possibly fifth, possibly sixth.
They kept Norm, who was a part of the championship run. Raptors don't even get past Milwaukee without what Norm did in game three and game four as well.
We know what Fred did.
We know what Fred
Shouts did. Shouts Hubie Brown.
We know what Pascal did. Yep. And OG unfortunately missed the thing because he got hurt and it was just a really rough year for him.
But now he's part of the team's future as they rebuild.
So you kept all four of those guys?
And people forget too. I don't know.
And they gave up Jakob Poeltl?
Yeah, but Pascal and OG at the time were like 1A and 1B.
I could have told you that. You know what I mean? Like, even me, not as a GM, just like some like hot take artist, I guess. That's what I am today, apparently. I'm real heated. I don't know how people do this emotionally every single day. But even I could have told you that. Hey, if you're going to trade Kawhi, you're the Spurs, I need to make sure I get back the best of every team. And when I looked at Toronto, I was like, I need to get Pascal and OG. And that's not even hindsight. At the time, it would have told you this.
The one thing I will say, and I don't think this is to excuse the Spurs from not extracting more from the Raptors. Kawhi was coming off playing like
nine
games.
Oh, that's who should apologize, by the way, the Spurs. They should have been apologizing to their fans. Like, hey, I'm sorry, this is all we got.
No, but Kawhi was coming off playing nine games. He clearly wanted out. And at the time, he was talking about wanting to go to LA, and the Spurs didn't want to make the deal. So there wasn't a lot of leverage there, but I'm still with you.
Yeah.
If you're able to extract a Jakob Poeltl, I feel like they should have pushed. And I would be curious, and I guess Masai would never tell us, if he would have parted with Pascal or OG in that trade to get Kawhi.
It would be very interesting. But luckily, we don't have to revisit that. And luckily, the $5 million coming back, because that's the maximum amount allowable in a trade. That's unbelievable.
No,
that should go always, straight to the foundation. That will always be my favorite.
I want that check. That check should be in the...
The Hall of Fame?
Yeah, Hall of Fame. Put it in the Hockey Hall of Fame so people in Toronto can check it out, you know? Right next to like the Gretzky exhibit.
That's how much like top NHL players make anyway.
I want that check framed and I want it sitting there at the Hockey Hall of Fame and we'll visit it.
Yeah. So you think DeMar will burn us tonight though after all this? He's doing well with the Bulls. The Bulls are 3-0.
Bulls are looking nice.
Yeah.
So we'll see though. I think this Raptors team is very Jekyll and Hyde up and down. So you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, you really don't know. But DeMar's an incredible player. He's doing well with the Bulls already. 21 points. 6 rebounds, 4 assists. The Bulls are 3-0. And honestly, it'll be a good test for the Raptors defensively to see what they can do because the Bulls are a pretty good offensive club. So that does it for the show today. You've been listening to The Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe. All episodes will be available on your podcast feed. I'm your host, Wim Liu. Thanks once again to my producer and co-host, Alex. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.